All right, so once when I was a teenager, I got up out of bed in the middle of the night and drove 45 minutes to the campus of Rutgers University just to eat a gyro sandwich from a grease truck I was obsessed with. Many years later, I graduated, frankly, to the bougie version of that, and flew to Chicago just to eat at a restaurant. So I thought I was scoring pretty high in the how far would you go for food scorecard. Until we talked to some of the folks on this week's show. Some of them went literally far, to the other side of the world, and some showed us the extremes they go to in their obsessive style of cooking. But they all showed us that food stood for much more to them than just something to eat. We'll start with Melanie Dene. She is one of the food world's favorite photographers. She's the person behind the My Last Supper series of books, but she started as a portrait photographer, where she learned that the key skill really isn't framing the shot or looking at the light. It's learning how to talk to people, to get them comfortable so they can be vulnerable, because that's how you get a really great shot. But a few years ago, she went on a trip for a shoot where everyone felt vulnerable, to find Afghani saffron. Hey, Melanie.
Hey.
It's great to see you.
It's so good to see you.
So you have been a portrait photographer for many years.
Many years.
And I think what that means is you've really learned the art of getting people to feel open and in some ways vulnerable with you to get really like evocative photos. But I want to hear about a trip that you took once where I think maybe you were the one feeling a little bit vulnerable. Tell me about why you went to Afghanistan in 2015.
Well, I went to Afghanistan because I became very interested in how these very deluxe items end up on my plate in New York. Mm-hmm. And I heard that saffron was actually more expensive than gold. And
sure.
I couldn't imagine how that could be. I mean, what would it take to get saffron to my plate? So I heard that they pick it in, you know, very remote countries, mm-hmm. sort of cloaked in, mostly dangerous places, Iran, Afghanistan. And at a dinner party, somebody said, oh, I have some friends that used to be in the U.S. military, and now they actually decided to start a company exporting saffron from Afghanistan to America. And I said, I have to go see that for myself. I mean, no question. And it's true, you know, the trajectory of my career has really changed. I mean, I used to only shoot portraits. In fact, it would insult me when a magazine like Vanity Fair would say, oh, while you're there, will you take a, you know, a quick snap of the building? And, you know, I was like, no, get a building photographer to take that picture, you know. So, you know, now photography has changed so much and become so much more open, mm-hmm. and less sort of, you know, you didn't have to stick in a box.
Right.
So this sort of journey, I guess it really triggered my photojournalistic heart, which is how I started.
Mm.
I really thought I was going to be Henriette Cartier-Bresson living in Paris. I moved to Paris. I took my trunk, my pillow, my comforter. You know, I was there. And uh-huh. I realized, you know, I couldn't make it there. I could never keep up with the language, the slang. So when this Afghanistan opportunity, or rather idea, popped mm-hmm, up, mm-hmm. I was, you know, reignited. So I called these people over and over and over. I mean, you know, I can be persistent, but this was Melanie times 100. And they finally allowed me to tag along.
Who are they?
So they were a company called Rumi Spice, and they're still around.
Okay.
And they were U.S. Military based in Iran, in Afghanistan. And they saw the potential to change the opium fields from poppy to saffron crocus.
Mm, okay.
So they thought, well, you know, if we start this small in Herat, which is just on the border of Iran, maybe we can actually start a business and help these local farmers.
Mm-hmm. And sort of develop this alternate economy where you're not essentially growing opium, right?
Exactly.
And now growing saffron. What was it like traveling with them?
Well,
first, how do you prepare for this trip?
Well, I prepared so deeply, you wouldn't imagine. The first thing I did was I went to Lexington Avenue here in New York, And I wanted to understand exactly how to wear a headscarf because, as you know, I have very long, curly hair. It's a bit unruly. And it's very disrespectful to show any hair under the headscarf. So I went and I learned to get some sort of like white shower cap, pin it to your hair, and then you wrap a scarf around. So there's no chance a gust of wind could blow it off or anything like that.
Okay.
Then I went over to Macy's and followed women who were wearing burkas around. And I saw the shoes they were wearing. And the closest shoes I could find were sort of those Toms of Maine, you know, those shoes?
Sure. They're sort of cloth sneakers.
It's like a cloth, mesh cloth sneaker, because I knew I couldn't wear a Western shoe. So I took it home and covered it with flour so that it would look like I'd already been dusty, because I feel like the number one giveaway would be a Western shoe. And then I Googled sort of the Western gait on YouTube and watched how we walk as opposed to how they walk. So I was ready to go.
Like trying to blend in when you got there.
Exactly. Not looking like a New York, Chicago girl with big curly hair.
Right. Who's just like, hey, guys, I'm here to take some pictures.
Well, exactly. And, you know, we were very cautioned. We had to fly into Afghanistan. And when you arrive there, first you fly to Dubai and you change before you get to the gate because you don't want somebody to see you in Western clothes at the gate. So we met in the bathroom. I met the woman I was traveling with who had had a chip embedded in her head so that they could know our location, but because we weren't supposed to use our phones.
Oh my God.
So we changed.
So she had a GPS.
Correct.
Transponder or whatever.
Something, yes.
So that her team would always know where she is.
Correct. So we met in the bathroom. We'd never met before. We were like, oh, hey, girl, tie my scarf. <You know? laughs> And then we went to the gate. And, you know, the whole thing is really do not make eye contact. Women should not make eye contact with men. This is what I was told. So we did the flight. And, you know, at this point, I was nervous. Before that, I was determined. So you land in Afghanistan. And I remember that it's lights out at the airport because you don't want to be a target. So, you know, you're landing in this sort of 5 o'clock cloaked sky that looks, you know, almost dark. It's very mountainous. And you land and, you know, you're told, like, meet a mile away. This is the way you get there. And we were met by this lovely NGO from Paris called, what were they called? ACTED. So ACTED was going to house us in their safe house until they felt like it was safe enough to move us over to Herat.
Okay.
So we just stayed in the safe house for a couple of days with Americans who were doing work. We didn't, you know, in anticipation of getting over to Herat.
Yeah. What was that first night like, though? Like, now you've gotten there and you're in this place and you're like, oh, I have to go to a safe house, you know, before they transport me to the place where I'm going to go see these saffron fields. What's going through your head?
Well, I was nervous because you're in this sort of bunker and you have chicken wire all around it. And but yeah, you're with Americans and Brits and Parisians and who live there. So, you know, you try to fit in. There's a family meal. We brought Pringles and whiskey with them with us. So because that's a real treat, and chocolate. And I remember my room was a very, very small single bed, and on the wall was a huge button, maybe bigger than the size of my palm, and it said, you know, press for emergency. So, and all night there's sirens going, and the transportation from the airport to the bunker, you know, you're just driving by tons of tanks and guns, and, you know, and we were wearing sunglasses because they didn't want us to even show our eyes, because at one point someone said to me, you look like a rich Iranian person. Like, I guess that's a threat.
Sure. It's just like anything that could give anyone
any clue,
any idea of who they think you might be.
And the reason for that is that, you know, to start an alternate economy in a country like this is very risky, because the Taliban doesn't like that. They want to be in control of everything that's going on. And if they get a whiff that you're sort of making money or something, they want in. So it was super important that we respected the rules, that we stayed undercover, that we were quiet. Then we flew to Herat, maybe 3 days later, and we were taken to this safe house, sort of, but it was more like the saffron processing place.
Okay.
So we were, they made a little room for us in the bunker, in the bottom of the building.
Okay.
And it was just an office room where they put two single beds. And we, you know, again, they didn't want, they wanted us up and out of the room before the female farmers came, because any knowledge would put them at risk.
Mm. Best they don't know.
Best they don't know that we're staying there. Best they don't know who we are. Best they don't talk to us or really look at us.
Mm.
And I remember at one point I wanted to walk to the top of the stairs. This is maybe 3 or 4 days in. And I asked, I said, may I please just go see some daylight? And they said, please don't.
Yeah.
It's just too risky.
We'll be back with the rest of the story from photographer Melanie Dunay. And we get a glimpse into the world of an R&D chef. I'm Francis Lam, and this is The Splendid Table from APM. I'm Francis Lam, and this is the show for curious cooks and eaters. Today, we're hearing stories about how far we'll go for food. We're talking with Melanie Dunay, a photographer who went undercover to Afghanistan in 2015 to learn about saffron, how it's harvested, how it's produced, and what life is like for the people who are trying to make a living growing it in Taliban territory. And we pick back up as Melanie has spent a few days with the women working at the processing plant, and she's waiting for a chance to go out to the fields.
So we spent our days, I spent the days photographing and sitting with the women and return, sort of peeling, you know, the saffron flower is a beautiful purple flower.
Okay.
And inside it, it has three stigmas that come, that shoot out of it. That's the saffron.
Okay.
So you sort of take the end of the stigma, you pinch it off with your nails, and you have this beautiful piece.
One thread of saffron.
That's right.
So when you get like an ounce of saffron, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of threads.
Exactly. And these women work for $1 a day taking the stigmas out, and then they are put on a tray, they're put in another room, and they're just dried. And then once they're dried, they're ready to go.
Mm.
So there are petals everywhere. I mean, this, you know, as day, one day led to the next day, it sort of had this dried flower smell. And we all shared a bathroom. There were probably 40 of us. There wasn't a lot of showering going on in Afghanistan for Melanie. and then, you know, we waited. I mean, the whole thing was waiting to be allowed to go to the fields. And that was about taking the temperature of the outside climate. What, where was the Taliban? What was going on? So we waited and waited. And the head of the organization said, I don't know, the local guy, I don't know if you're going to be able to go. I think it's too risky. And I was so disappointed, of course. But, you know, again, I'm there for 10 days. Like, who am I to jeopardize these people's
sure.
life? But he could see I was so, you know, I wear my feelings right on my face. And so the next day, an elder came and he said, I've organized it. We're going to take a big minivan with my mother. And he was already like 75. So his 90-year-old mother, him, his sister, his daughter. So there were like 8 of us in this little minivan. And they put the 2 of us in the back. So every time we were stopped and they looked in, they would, you know, we were in sort of a minivan that had a door that slid open.
Mm-hmm.
And they would look in and they were like, oh, you're okay. You're good. You're good. Because you look like a family.
Right.
So they all risked their lives for us. We drove through most dusty, desolate roads. I mean, it was like being on the moon. I don't even remember if we saw people. It was just dusty, dusty, dusty. And at this point, you know, your heart is definitely in your throat because this is it. If they pull us over, they don't care about us. And also it's very, you know, it jeopardizes the family and the whole business for 2 Westerners to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the field and suddenly they say, good, you have 5 minutes. And so I took a selfie.
Oh my God.
I did. I couldn't believe the beauty of arriving to this field of purple. It was as far as your eye could see, and behind was almost like a purple-looking mountain. And of course, purple is my favorite color. So I felt
wearing
like
it
I
right
had
now.
Arrived. I am wearing purple. It was so majestic, and the fields were planted perfectly, just row after row after row. Mm. And the thing about the saffron is it only actually blooms for 2 hours a day, and then it shuts. So you have to be there, working fast, pluck, 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 put it in the bucket, send it back to the town. Mm. So the women are working, you know, furiously, and they're wearing the most beautiful, they're crouched down with these blue buckets, but they're literally picking, picking, picking. So of course I go over to take a picture, and they're, no, please. Mm. So I didn't. I took, you know, a picture from afar, which again, you know, starting as a portrait photographer, so far I haven't taken one portrait in 10 days.
Right. But also recognizing that, oh, this is not your place. This is not your world. Like, you know, respecting the fact that it's not meant for you.
Absolutely. And I thought, you know, this in the moment, look somewhere else. There's always a picture. And I saw one of the men walking with one of the women, and I chopped off their heads. And it's one of my favorite pictures because you see the burqa. It's a black burqa kind of like blowing in the wind. You see the rose, and then you see the man and the woman together walking. Mm. So I tried to just look. You know, I had about 5 minutes. And then, of course, then all the elders were like, take a picture of me, take a picture of me, take a picture of me. So it became like a Hallmark moment.
Sure. You owe it to them, you know, you're there. Do you know if the field you visited is still planted in saffron?
You know, I don't know if that very field was. I heard over the course of the next year that they were able to add more farms, which meant more farmers, more money. And I did get an email from them yesterday with a holiday sale of saffron. So I hope business is booming.
How do you feel about saffron now?
Well, you know, I didn't know how to use saffron, so I took a bunch of it back to Herat, and we tried to cook. We went back to the safe house with it, and we decided, you know, we'd like to cook you guys a meal with the saffron. So I emptied the whole thing in there.
Oh, gosh.
And it was a $10,000 meal.
And it just, like, you could not see, hear, or taste anything else for, like, a week.
Exactly. Yeah. And my fingers were so stained, you know, from working. I mean, really stained for weeks from just pulling out those stigmas.
Wow.
I should probably use some saffron. I still have some, actually.
Next time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you.
See photos of Melanie's trip at splendidtable.org. And Melanie Dunay's latest project is a photographic series called Don't Play With Your Food, which will be produced and shown in cities across the U.S. and Europe. And if you want to cook after that tale, you can find a recipe for fregola with clams and saffron from America's Test Kitchen at splendidtable.org.